Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
And every strand of her hair was so beautiful. I can't believe she was only dreaming tonight.
I don't know what this is, but I love it. I wrote that on the record. I like when you give me variety on the turns.
This is
listen, I like the Nards, but at this point, keep going with variety. What do you have here for
this
me?
This is Flesh is on Fire by James House. This is from the great Teen Wolf soundtrack.
Wow.
Jimmy House? Wow. Jimmy House did this one.
Flesh is on Fire. The song I wrote regarding my acquisition of herpes.
Oh, jeez. You should ever shake that.
It's always with me. Mm-hmm.
They're all so flashy and trashy and try too hard. I can't believe you were only a dream.
Power. They're flashy and trashy and they try too hard.
You can just picture Michael J. Fox as a wolf making his way up and down the court against Mick, which, as an Irishman, I found offensive.
Yeah, you have a right to.
It's Ryan Kelly Morning After. This is the all-new 590 The Fan, KFNS. Timothy Michael McKernage, Meet the Cat Hayes, Douglas Elvin Vaughn with you. Kelly Chase with us, brought to you by Petromart. That's at 8:30. And John Daly going to be with us at 9:15. Looking forward to that. Your emails at 9:45. Two tickets to the St. Louis debut of Ice Guardians. That's Monday, November 7th. The pageant starting at 7 p.m. Special guests Kelly Chase and Brett Hull. For that, you can get your tickets now. It's at the pageant. I finna go. You finna go? I finna go.
That's funny.
Yeah, wow. Decent.
Doug, you finna go?
It sounds like a really cool place to go when you say, I finna go.
Right.
If I just said something like, well, I'd like to go to the presentation.
What does that actually mean, Finn? I finna go. I understand the context, but where does that...
I think it came
from... Where does that originate?
I think it's from I'm fixing to go, and fixing became ficken or finnin, or I'm finna go. I'm fixing to go.
Well, if you look it up in the dictionary, it's F-I-N-N-A.
Yeah, but I think it started as fixing.
They're fixing games.
What about fitting?
I'm fixing to do this or that. And this came down to finna.
What about fixins?
That's something different.
Who not says knowing. I'm fixing? Like, that's some Alice from the Brady Bunch would say.
Right.
I'm fixing to go visit Sam.
Ah, Sam the Butcher. Wonderful.
Yeah.
At least it didn't take anything special to wipe out the longest title drought in the history of professional sports. Only the greatest World Series Game 7 ever played. That's all.
Okay.
From Jason Stark this morning. Move over, Jack Morris and Luis Gonzalez. Tell Ralph, Terry, and Madison Bumgarner they had a great run. Bumgarner's was 2 years ago. And you, Bill Mazeroski fans, submit your case via your favorite form of social media. But we would argue that none of those games can top the passion, the drama, and the history of Game 7 in Cleveland on a balmy Wednesday night turned stormy Thursday morning.
Okay.
It took 10 exhausting innings and 4 hours and 45 exhilarating minutes.
Okay.
But when it finally ended at 12:47 a.m. on November 3rd, 2016, the giant left field scoreboard read, Cubs 8, Indians 7. And it was suddenly possible to type a sentence that no living human has ever typed. The Chicago Cubs are the champions of baseball. Wow.
How are you going to top Bill Mazeroski hitting a walk-off home run to win for the Pirates 10-9 in Game 7 against the powerful New York Yankees? How are you going to top that?
Well, state your case via your favorite form of social media. I think you put that in there. Yeah.
In other words, the person who wrote this is 25 years old, and whatever happened before I was alive doesn't matter.
No,
Jason Stark is like 40-something, okay. I believe.
I would take the over on that.
Well, 50. He wasn't alive for then either if he's 40-something.
50?
I mean, could you top a walk-off home run to beat the Yankees?
That's great. But I do understand people, you know, talking about the Cubs putting the drought to bed, finally, against a team that also had experienced a long drought.
Yeah.
I could understand the argument being made.
But the Pirates had been among the worst teams in Major League history up until this.
But, Doug, if you're a writer and you got to write about this, I guess that's what you probably go down that lane. I get it.
The shame of it is it actually may be the truth.
Maybe.
But because after every dramatic sporting event, since the advent of Twitter, every big game becomes the greatest game ever, it becomes the boy who cried wolf. Joining us right now, someone who is actually in attendance, ladies and gentlemen, our cohort here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. You know him from the Two Fox, Charles Leonard Marlowe on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Good morning, Chuckles.
Good morning, guys. This was the greatest game ever. Don't listen to Doug trying to say everything was better back in the day when I was young.
Man, Charlie came loaded for bear this
morning. Let's ignore everything that happened before last night.
So, Charlie,
did
you do a live shot or something on tape for the Two Fox after the game? And if so, I would like to know how you presented this game to your viewing audience.
I did several live shots and a few on tape as well. Yeah, I don't know if it was the greatest game ever, but I think for me it was the greatest game that I've seen or been to, and I know Game 6, the David Freese game, is right up there, and maybe they're the exact same. I can't remember. That was 5 years ago, but just kind of being there last night, it's hard to top, and I think also just the historical aspect of both teams not winning in forever adds to it. I mean, I think it's hard to beat Game 6 from 2011, and it's probably hard to beat last night's game. It's, as Tony La Russa would say, tied for first.
Nice. Yeah. What was the atmosphere like in that ballpark after Davis hit the home run?
Oh, it was unbelievable. It's just one of those things where you just kind of couldn't believe it. And I think the whole ballpark thought the game was pretty much over in the fifth inning when it was 5-1. I thought this game was over. And I think it's also the fact that that home run was off Aroldis Chapman. The fact that dude throws 106 miles an hour and he's one of the best closers in all of baseball. Because after that happened, I was kind of thinking back about the great World Series home runs. And in my lifetime, Joe Carter, I wasn't around for Bill Mazeroski, obviously, but I was thinking about David Freese, and off the top of my head, I had to look up who he hit that home run off.
Was it Mark Lowe?
Was Mark Lowe, yes. Mark Lowe was the home run to win it. So I think the fact that it came off of Aroldis Chapman really adds to it. And also Rajai Davis had a couple miscues earlier in the game. But just the fact that you thought that the Indians were done, I mean, that place exploded when Rajai Davis hit it out. And then I think most people thought the Indians were going to win after that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy the fact that they didn't. That's one of the biggest home runs in World Series history. I don't care what anybody says, but looking back, it'll probably be forgotten by a lot of people because the Indians didn't win.
Yeah, I think that's a fair observation. I agree with you on that. And that's what I was curious about because, again, it wasn't just, okay, the Indians had been threatening. The Indians had been threatening. They were down by three with four outs to go and Chapman on the mound. And it's an infield hit. Brandon Guyer with really good at-bat with the right center double. And then Davis with an even better at-bat, fouling off pitches before connecting and pulling a ball, line shot off the camera in left field. And so you go from, it reminds me, and it's a loose analogy, but it reminds me of a couple of years ago with the Cardinals and Dodgers, Matt Adams against Clayton Kershaw. You go from going, okay, you're just kind of resigned to defeat, even though it isn't the ninth, and then Adams hits a home run off the left-hander Kershaw, and you go from resigned to defeat to now believing you're going to win, except in this case, for the Indians, they came up short. You know, this is something, it really gets inside baseball, but it was Game 7 of the World Series. I thought one of the biggest misses from the whole night was the crappy at-bat by Yan Gomes. They had the Cubs and Chapman on the ropes, and he just had a terrible at-bat. And if you recall, he struck out. And I don't know who it was that stole second, but the throw went into center field, and he just swung at crap. It was a really bad at-bat. And I felt like that was the time for the knockout punch. The Indians couldn't deliver it. And I don't know how much you were able to watch, Charlie, because I know you're covering the game, but in the post-game interviews on the field, both Rizzo and Bryant, on their own, because I don't think Verducci or Rosenthal were aware of it, cited Jason Hayward pulling the team together in the rain delay as something that stopped the bleeding and got them back in the right frame of mind, and then they come out and get the leadoff hit from Schwarber, and cliche, the rest is history. Were you aware of the Hayward, Newt Rockne-like speech that apparently took place at Progressive Field in the rain delay?
I did not hear about that. I did hear Theo Epstein saying that he walked down there and everybody for the Cubs was kind of huddled in the weight room having the hoorah speech, so maybe that's what he was talking about there, where Hayward was given the speech. Yeah, it was just one of those crazy games. I think too, with when you're talking about Chapman, I think it's the fact that I can't off the top of my head ever think of or remember guys hitting home runs off him. So you're kind of thinking to get those two runs, they're going to have to scratch together a bunch of hits. I just don't remember guys hitting home runs off Aroldis Chapman. That's why when you see the ball go out off of him, it's kind of crazy to think.
Yeah, and he had not allowed a home run as a Cub since being acquired 3 months ago, adding to it. Then the Indians are in the spot where Shaw finishes off the ninth, has the rain delay. Again, the rain delay wasn't some long rain delay, but he does go out there and he starts getting hit. And the Indians are now down two runs after Zobrist and Montero with the base hit. But there again, here they come. And the tying run's on base. The winning run is at the plate, but Terry Francona's bench is shot, and a guy who's a career 197 hitter, Michael Martinez, is in against Montgomery, and that's the end of it. Your thoughts on Bryant fielding, smiling as the ball is coming to him, and the final out, and the reaction in the ballpark when that took place?
Yeah, and the place exploded again, and that's where, even though I think, I was trying to ask beforehand people sitting around me what they thought the percentage of Cubs fans were in there, and where we were sitting in right field, for whatever reason, the pocket right underneath us, I swear it looked like there was two-thirds Cubs fans where we were sitting right underneath, but then you look around the park, and you know, I was asking people, and some people said 25%, some people said 40%, some people said a third. So I think that's fair, somewhere in there, 30, 33, 35%. When that out was made, it seems like the place erupted almost as loud as for the Rajai Davis home run. There really was a ton of Cubs fans in there. It, you know, whenever the Cubs had a big play, it almost felt like it was a home game there, too. Yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, even though I'm not really a Cubs fan, not really an Indians fan, I was really happy just to be at that game and kind of to witness history. So it was cool to see the Cubs win it and run on the field. And it was just weird to say and think that the Cubs are the World Series champs, because you almost think like that would never happen.
Watching it on TV, it did look like it was about 50-50, you know, in terms of the fans. Did you read anything about Cubs fans descending on Cleveland?
Yeah, and I mean, if you just kind of looked on Twitter or read about the ticket market, it sure seemed like for Game 7 it was Cubs fans coming back to buy those tickets, in kind of the same way that Cubs fans necessarily didn't really want to now go to Game 5 when it was a chance for the Indians to clinch at Wrigley Field and to spend, you know, thousands of dollars to see that when there was no chance of the Cubs to clinch there. Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I was looking, I thought it might be around 50-50, but then for whatever reason, like the third base side, I didn't think you had nearly as many Cubs fans, and I was far away, but you're kind of looking, it was a lot of red, and some of the white jerseys, you know, could be Cubs fans as well as Indians fans, but, you know, where I was sitting, there was a ton of Cubs fans in the outfield area, but I think overall, like, I don't think it was 50-50 Cubs fans, but I think it was relatively close, and the ones that were there were really loud.
How do you live with yourself as an Indians fan to have sold your Game 7 ticket to a Cub fan? You know that happened probably by the thousands.
Yeah. I think if you can get, what, $5,000, I don't know what those tickets were going for, but I know some for Game 3 at Wrigley were going for upwards of that. I mean, if you're making whatever, you know, not a ton of money per year, and you can get $5,000 to pay for your season tickets for the year, I can understand why people would do that, especially after the fact. Even though it was a great game, if you know the Indians lost, you probably feel a little better about it.
Not to bring up a sore subject, but you didn't get the Eddie Vedder interview last year. Oh. But this year, did you have any celebrity encounters?
Did you get Charlie Sheen?
No, I didn't see Charlie Sheen. No, I didn't. I was pretty much doing just a ton of live shots for these games here. I saw all those celebrities kind of walking around back at Wrigley. I also thought, and I kind of figured MLB would not allow it because I know Charlie Sheen. You know, he's not a good guy and he has all the issues going on. And they showed him. I don't think he was shown on the Fox broadcast, was he?
Yeah, he was shown one time, yeah. Like with other guys. Like he was literally up for like a second and a half.
Okay, so I didn't see that. They obviously didn't show the part where they did show him in between innings, and he was on the big Jumbotron for a good probably 15, 20 seconds, and they did play Wild Thing, and the place went crazy. I do think if they would have done it right, I understand why Major League Baseball probably shut it down, but if they would have done that right and let him run in from the bullpen, kind of dressed as Rick Vaughn to throw out the first pitch with that song on, which you know he would have done. Mm-hmm. That would have been an awesome moment. I understand why MLB didn't want that.
So who threw out the first pitch? Tomy threw out the first pitch?
Jim Tomy, yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't even show it on the broadcast. So at that point, you're like, okay, clearly Rick Vaughn did not make a glorious return to the field. Otherwise, they would have shown it. But Tomy threw out the first pitch. So
yeah, and Charlie Sheen tweeted that beforehand. He said, you know, whoever in Major League Baseball shut down me throwing out the first pitch, screw you, or something like that.
Oh, jeez. We were on that story yesterday. I'm just curious, though. Do you think that if they had allowed Sheehan to throw out the first pitch and had him run in, Martinez would have come through with a base hit? Would it have impacted the game?
Provocative.
I do think they would have Finna to win, yes.
Nice. How's food, Chuck?
Food, you know, pretty standard. I think I had a couple pieces of pizza last night, Doug.
That was the media food?
You know, they gave you the little tickets to get whatever you want from the concession stand.
I'll be turned. Okay.
It was, I'm telling you, in Chicago, it was so cold. I was walking around all the time just to get coffee to kind of keep warm and eat here and there. But the last two games, we're talking temperatures, you know, 75 degrees. I think it was 77 to start game six.
Hmm. Balmy.
Go ahead, Kat.
No, I just said that's balmy. Jason Stark described it as balmy, and so you're backing up his take on the game. What was the reaction from Cleveland fans? I would guess, you know, they're disappointed, but maybe more so if it were the Cubs, it'd be just another piece of an awful history. But at least the Cubs seem lined up where they're going to be back again, where I'm not so sure the folks in Cleveland are that confident that this is the beginning of any sort of run, or am I wrong?
I agree with you on that. I was listening to Cleveland sports radio a little bit here and there, and I do think they think that they're going to be back. Now, I'm not saying World Series every year, and I think we can all agree the Cubs on paper, you know, they could be setting up for a potential little dynasty here, but I think Indians fans do think they will be back. And if you look at their team, they have a lot of young players too, and a lot of guys who are going to be back. Same with the Cubs, not really a ton of free agents, big marquee guys. So I do think the Indians will be back in the playoffs. I just don't know if they'll run this deep all the time. This was kind of one of those magical years for them. But then again, if you look at the fact that if Carrasco and Salazar are back, I mean, they really got
Brantley,
the World Series,
I mean,
and almost won it with pretty much one legit healthy starting pitcher. Yeah. And that was pretty amazing to see. It was pretty much Corey Kluber and Andrew Miller and Shaw and Allen for most of the postseason.
Whereas the Cubs dealt with a huge injury early on, and he was able to come back for the World Series in Schwarber, the Indians were just decimated. I mean, their run is just incredibly surprising, and it's a credit to them. I just don't see them having, you know, even near the staying power that the Cubs do. But as you mentioned, Charlie, there are a number of young pitchers on that roster, some of whom, of course, weren't able to participate. And then Michael Brantley is an MVP-caliber player with the talents he has, and he wasn't a factor in 2016 either, so he should be back for 2017. I feel like around baseball, of course, the story is the Cubs, but the fact that the Indians even got there in the first place is a hell of an accomplishment. And had the Indians been able to complete the comeback and win the game, I feel like Joe Maddon would be getting crucified nationally, especially in Chicago, but nationally. I felt like there were moves all over the place that were just super questionable in foresight, not look how this wound up working out. Whether it be Chapman in Game 6, which just blows me away that happened, pulling Hendricks. I believe, and I haven't read it anywhere. I don't even know what he's asked him about it. If he put on the Javier Baez squeeze on 3-2, I don't know if you guys saw. I was retweeting Andrew McCutchen, Mark Mulder. They were just like, "What in the world is going on?"
He had a good pitch to bunt. He just missed it. I mean, it was right down the middle.
But the point is, a 3-2. You know, I mean, what in the world are you doing? Pitch where you're bunting. So I feel like he got let off the hook, and you know, Joe Maddon has led two organizations now to the World Series and won the World Championship with the Cubs, but I didn't think he was firing on all cylinders in games 6 and 7.
Yeah, I agree, and I've been kind of having some fun on Twitter with I just think for this World Series at the beginning, just too much credit was given to both managers. I do think that Terry Francona managing his bullpen, you know, into the World Series was just amazing doing that, but also the fact that Andrew Miller and Sean Allen were pitching really well. Yeah, I think both managers in last night's game, there was a ton of mismanagement you could call, and it wasn't after the fact. I mean, you just mentioned all the things that happened with Joe Maddon and the Cubs. Look at the Indians, though, too. I mean, you can definitely make the case that Kluber was left in an inning too long.
Yeah.
Miller was left in an inning too long, and I totally understand that those guys got you there. But you can only rely on your pitching staff on short rest and just working them so much for so long. I mean, it was clear that Corey Kluber was not near the Corey Kluber we had seen in the first two games.
Didn't have a strikeout.
Right, and that's expected when you have to pitch on short rest back-to-back times. And that's the thing. Apparently in games where Kluber and Miller pitch, they averaged like 9.5 strikeouts in those games. They had one combined. They weren't near you know, the effectiveness they were earlier, and I thought that was pretty obvious, and Francona left both of those guys out there too long, and there was both runs scored after that. So I think if you look at Maddon and Francona last night, it was certainly not great managing on either side.
But I think probably the reason they did it that way is they just didn't trust some of the other relievers. I mean, the Cubs tried to sneak Edwards in there at the end, and he couldn't get through the 10th inning. He needed more help, too. I think they just didn't trust anybody else. They probably would have loved to have had another fresh arm out there in the bullpen that they could bring into a big situation, but didn't think they could get through it.
Yeah, I understand that. I think if you're the Indians, though, you got to trust almost everybody in that bullpen because they've been really, really good. I also agree with what Tim said earlier. I just, and this is not hindsight, I tweeted this at the time, I didn't think it made any sense to pull Hendricks at that time because you had too many outs to get. At that moment in the game, in the fifth inning, you're talking about, what, 13 or so outs. And Hendricks, I mean, he was pretty much cruising. It wasn't like he was getting hit around. And I just think, like, Joe Maddon, he would take Hendricks, he would take Lackey out of that game in the fifth inning. There's no chance on God's green earth he would ever take Lester or Arrieta out of that game. And if it was similar, and Hendricks had the lowest ERA in the National League this season. And, you know, Lester actually didn't pitch that poorly. It was kind of some bad luck on that, you know, swinging bunt error, and then he bounces a ball, which happens to go off Ross's helmet and two runs score. But also, do you really know what you're going to get out of John Lester coming off 2 days rest where it's not like he does that all the time? I would have let Hendricks throw more in that game, especially knowing that you weren't going to be able to go to Aroldis Chapman for 8 outs again. I mean, for him to be effective, you probably needed him to go for about 4 or 5 outs after what he had thrown Sunday and in Game 6.
And a couple things about what you just said. First off, Maddon said before the game, I would not bring Lester in with runners on base in the middle of an inning because he hasn't been a reliever in 9 years. He hasn't thrown out of the bullpen in 9 years. So what happens? He brings him in the middle of an inning. And then Chapman, as you make reference to, he had some long at-bats before the Davis home run, and so I'm already looking at him going, my God, he can't possibly have more than another inning left in him, and then who is left out there? When I saw Carl Edwards Jr. up to start throwing, I'm going, my God, I've watched this guy pitch a few times. There's no question he's absurdly talented, especially for a 48th-round pick. But, God, I mean, that's not the guy that you really want to be putting the ball in his hands, but that just showed that they had nothing left. It really exposed them, and I think, you know, I don't have any doubt that Joe Maddon is an incredibly talented manager, and the fact that he is a part of the Cubs organization makes an already threatening roster all the more dangerous. But that doesn't mean that he is infallible with these decisions. And I thought he was all over the map over the last couple of games and won despite that because of the talent on that roster. I really thought he left himself exposed. And if they lost that game, I think the GOAT would have been much more Joe Maddon than Aroldis Chapman. Charlie Marlowe up in Ohio making his way back to St. Louis after getting a chance to cover a World Series that will be remembered for a long time. Chuckles, great to hear from you, sir. Enjoyed it. Thank you for your time early in the morning.
Thanks, boys. I enjoyed it as well.
There he See is, ya. Charles Hi. Leonard Marlowe on the Appliance Discounter phone lines.
You know what else is amazing to me? That Lester is such a dominant postseason pitcher, and he can't throw to first base to hold a runner on, and throws underhand to first base when it's a fielding play.
He didn't even want to field the bunt.
And he hasn't been exposed. And it is true.
He should have been an inning double play, but he couldn't throw to second, so he underhanded to first.
And it hasn't been him. You know, like, he must be mentally tough to be able to focus on pitching and just accept the fact that I'm not throwing to first, I'm not going after that bunt. And give Rizzo a lot of credit, too, because he covers a lot of ground out there and is able to go in and get those bunts. But isn't that amazing that
it's really hard
he hasn't been exposed?
It's very hard to believe that they can't bring in a psychiatrist or something or practice it on the side and get over that. I mean, it's really hard to believe.
But don't you think
that's something you can't
in the postseason?
Over.
All right, this is where, you know, this is where it's going to come home to roost that he's unable to do certain things that you have to do, and he's able to get around it.
But you see the guys, they get such a big lead at first base on him that the base runner can't help but think he's going to pick me off. And they're almost leaning back to first base when he pitches it. They always think, no, this is the time I'm going to be embarrassed and he's going to throw and I'm going to be out by 2 feet. I can't lead off this much. It messes with the base runner's head too.
And he must be mentally tough because it doesn't mess with him at all, apparently.
Yeah. I just can't believe that he can't get past that.
Guys, I'm not sure if I heard this right, but did Charlie say it was unbelievable? It was kind of one of those things that you couldn't believe. Thanks. That's from the 636. We'll do audio forensics.
Well, he may have.
He was expressing the fact that what we saw last night was unbelievable.
I'm watching right now in the studio, Doug, they're the Gateway Buick GMC Studios, I-270 McDonald.
Plush, too.
That Nelly, friend of the show, is on First Take. Is that what it's called? What is this thing? They promote Undisputed.
Undisputed with
the wonderful Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp. And, boy, there was a promo last night in the middle of the game 40 times in which Skip Bayless was given this. Oh, it was like scalding. I said, Andrew, turn the air conditioning on. It's so hot.
Oh, did you?
This scalding take on LeBron James. Toughness, you know, one of the best players in the history of the game with a bunch of championships. It was a great... There was a great take on that in the middle of the playoffs, and last night it culminated with the hottest take. And I'm like, man, I need to make sure that I tune into this to hear Shannon Sharp and Skip Bayless.
Well, it's just played right into their hands.
It's a great show on Fox Sports 1, and as hot take shows go, that one is number one, and it's undisputed.
He actually missed one yesterday, or it might have been earlier yesterday morning about how he... In guaranteeing that Russell Westbrook will average a triple-double this year.
Wow, Doug.
He can guarantee that, can he?
I mean, R-Dub and K-Dub tonight. What are you watching?
I guess if you're sitting up there for an hour, you got to have to say something.
This is like the fourth rapper they've had on this show in 2 weeks. So I don't get it.
Wheezy and Skip Bayless are friends.
Yeah, I don't get it.
What's up, Nelly?
I haven't seen Nelly speak one time yet. Because there is a lot of hot taking going on.
Well, they're yelling at each other about their clothes, I think.
I assume they're holding somebody accountable. I would hope. And Nelly's kind of looking at him going, man, this. Man.
Nelly's like, I got to talk to my agent.
He's thinking I should have gone on with Hannah.
Yeah, whatever happened with that? I guess that didn't happen.
No, I think because he didn't want to talk about the IRS stuff, and I think that's what they wanted to talk about. So,
well, Shannon Sharp and Skip Bayless are yelling at each other about blaming LeBron James for the Indians losing last night, I would imagine. At least that's what I can see if I'm reading lips properly. Doug, Harry's Razors keeps my face soft and rewarding.
Boy face.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a boy face.
I used to have these old razors and switched to Harry's and couldn't be happier that I have. It really is a game changer. Big razor companies have always made a small change, then they come out with the newest version, and they razor already high prices. Unlike those guys, Harry's doesn't believe in upcharging. which is why they made their razors even better, and they're keeping prices exactly the same. Harry's five-blade razors now include softer flex hinge for a more comfortable glide, trimmer blade for hard-to-reach places, a lubricating strip, and textured handle for more control when it's wet. Still just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they'll send you their popular free trial set. Free, which comes with a razor, five-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. Get your free trial set when you subscribe. Just pay $3 for shipping. Plus, special offer for our listeners. Enter the promo code INSIDESTL at checkout, and you get a post-shave balm for free with your order. Go to harrys.com right now, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com right now, harrys.com right now. Enter promo code INSIDESTL at checkout to claim your free trial set and post-shave balm. That's harrys.com, promo code INSIDESTL. Most of the focus of the program this morning on Game 7 of the World Series. However, we did talk about the John Daly 30 for 30, and John Daly is going to join us live on the Ryan Kelly Morning After on the Appliance Discounter phone lines at 9:15. But the Blues are in action tonight, trying to bounce back from a rough one at Madison Square Garden on Tuesday. It's time for Kelly Chase, brought to you by Petromart.
Hey, Blues fans, it's time to drop your gloves and face off on the St. Louis Blues Report with Kelly Chase. Fueled by Petromart, a proud sponsor of your St. Louis Blues. Now, here's Chaser.
Blues and Stars tonight, Doug, and joining us right now to talk it over, Kelly Chase, brought to you by Petromart. Hey, Chaser.
How you doing this morning, boys?
Very fine, thank you. Hey, we're giving away two tickets to the St. Louis debut of Ice Guardians this Monday at the Pageant, and that starts at 7 p.m. I am looking forward to seeing this film. Special guest, of course, you and Brett Hull. For our audience members who would like to get these tickets and they are not going to win email of the day, how can they get the tickets to see Ice Guardians at the Pageant?
Ticketmaster.
Ticketmaster is where it's at.
They've got a few left. And, Joe Koser, Dave Semenko will be in, and the producer, Adam Sorgi, who did a great job with the film, will be there on stage after, and they'll Q&A with them, and it should be fun.
Looking forward to it. It is this Monday, 7 o'clock at the Pageant. Kelly Chase, our guest, and he is presented by Petromart. He is with us every week here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Blues and Stars tonight. I just want to go back to the game on Tuesday, scoring already something that people are starting, okay, a little bit of a problem here. And then you have a game like Tuesday night against the Rangers. Pretty discouraging. Your thoughts on what took place on Tuesday?
Well, I think that Jake basically got hung out to dry in a lot of circumstances. They played a tight game in St. Louis before they left, that they're having trouble scoring. Their goaltender was fantastic in, and then he started out the same way in New York, and the opportunities that the Rangers got were glaring. So, yes, you have to play a faster game, but you also have to be able to defend a little bit, and I think the Blues missed their cue in that. It was an ugly game, and I'm going to start off by saying the Rangers are maybe the best team in the East for depth. I think that the Washington Capitals have the most skill, right up there with Tampa, and I think that the Rangers have the most depth. So it was a test, and I think they took it to heart what happened in St. Louis, where they outplayed the Blues for the second half of the game and then lost the hockey game, and they weren't about to have it happen in Madison Square Garden, and that's how they approached it, and they just kept coming, four lines.
The offensive woes have been with the Blues for a little stretch here, I think three goals in four games. Where's the offense going to come from? Where should it come from? What's going wrong in your opinion?
Well, I mean, you guys get caught up in aiming and stuff like that when things aren't going their way. So whether it's Schwartz, Fabry, Tarasenko now has scored in quite a few, you just got to hit the net. Vladdy's case, look, hit the net, whether it goes in or it doesn't go in, you're not going to control the rebound. You're not going to, it's not going to be a healthy save. It's going to be something that your garbage laying around. So these guys have just, stop aiming and just start shooting and hitting the net. And look, a kid like Robbie Savage, for instance, if he wasn't getting a chance, not that he's not working hard right now, you'd be concerned about him. You'd wonder what's happened. But he's, you know, he's a competitive guy that's worked extremely hard. And eventually those will go in. And it's just a matter of, you know, look, you know, hit the net, go to the net. When they start going in, they're going to go in. The chemistry has to be right as well. And they're trying to change that around a little bit. I think tonight's steam will go with Berglund and Perron. And so they'll change some things around a little bit there. I think Robbie Fabry will go up with Stas and Yashkin. And Yakupov might be the healthy guy that's going to get scratched tonight. And it might be a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a wake-up call, too, for a few guys to say, hey, look, let's get, you know, let's straighten out here and get down to the, you know, playing more of a secure game where we start getting pucks to the net, because the only way to get out of a funk when you're scoring is hard work.
Is Petro going to be okay? I know he was dealing with something.
Yeah, you know what? I talked to him yesterday. He said, you know, a long way from my heart. Don't worry about me. So I don't know if that means that he's going to play tonight, or he's going to take, you know, a little cautious and say, okay, tonight I'm going to sit back. But it's, you know, but I'll be back, you know, sooner than later. It looked like he kind of, you know, tweaked some part of the leg, and when the way he was awkwardly went down in front of the net and ended up into the board. So again, you know, the defensive play has been a problem last game, but the defense in general has been really good this year, as well as the goaltending. So, you know, I think the boys have some depth there. Bertuzzo out of the lineup as well, but they still have some depth there. So it will give them a little bit of a chance to, you know, see what else they got if he's not there. And then, like I said, it's more of the hard work down the other end of the ice they got to be concerned about.
This will be the first time the Blues played Dallas since they met in the playoffs last year. Anything from that carry over at all? Do you guys remember that? Or?
You know what? Yeah, it's odd. Is the Dallas Stars are a fragile group right now. They're you know, they dip their chins a lot when they get down. And as much skill as they have in that team, they don't have a lot of you guys to just feel secure about, hey, when we're down, we're so skilled, we're going to get back in this hockey game now. That being said, it doesn't mean they can't light you up for five, because they do have a ton of skill. Their goaltending hasn't been great, and most importantly for them, their defense has to be better. And I think that you know, it's been a little bit of a problem now. That being said, when they have the puck, when they're controlling the puck, they're controlling the game, they just do such a good job skill-wise that they're a tough team to play against.
They've had some goaltending issues too, right?
But yeah, you know, I think that started last year in the playoffs. I think you know, you saw what happened in the playoffs last year, and Carter Lettinen was the kind of their go-to guy, and I just think that, you know, there were some holes there, and that's when it started. And the insecurities of pucks, you know, getting through you or coming at you, it's kind of like, here we go again, sort of an attitude, and that's a tough way to play. So I heard both L.A., and Dallas are looking at Yaroslav Halak, they're in a three-goalie rotation in the island. And you also got to remember that the Tampa Bay Lightning, like it or not, have two goaltenders that are very, very good. And one of them is going to be exposed in the expansion draft now, whether it's Bishop or not. I know they had a deal made, or they thought they had a deal made for Bishop to go to Calgary last year, and we ended up sending Elliott there. But I would expect that one of those two goaltenders will get moved. And I'm hearing that the Dallas Stars might be one of those teams that are going to, you know, take a look at them.
Kelly Chase brought to you by Petromart here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. You're always welcome to text in questions for Chaser if you haven't, because he's with us every week here on the program. And he is brought to you by Petromart. And once again, our prize for our email today, two tickets to the St. Louis debut of Ice Guardians. It's this Monday at the Pageant. Get your tickets on Ticketmaster. It starts at 7 p.m. Chase will be there speaking. Q&A afterwards. Brett Hull also in attendance, and I am looking forward to being in attendance as well. It's Ice Guardians. If you haven't checked out the trailer, do so on YouTube. I am looking forward to this one. Again, tickets available on Ticketmaster. Ice Guardians this Monday, November 7th at the Pageant. Chaser, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much.
Hey, no problem. And what a game last night, huh?
Oh, my God. That thing was incredible. Absolutely incredible. Did you have a rooting interest? Did you know anybody? I feel like you always know people.
Well, of course. You know I was cheering for the Cubs because of Grace.
Yeah, and, I was about to say Grace, I thought might be.
Yeah, you know what? I was literally standing on the bar in the hotel lobby
cheering. I was so happy when they won. I really felt like, I just think it's a relief, and I have a, you know, a great deal of respect for Madden, and just watching the game and watching those guys like Sutcliffe and those guys that played there too. I was kind of texting with them, and it was like, it was almost like they were afraid to say, yeah, we got this in the bag a few times. I was laughing, but it was good. I love it. I don't think there's anything that brings people together like sports, and that last night was awesome.
That was absolutely incredible. It really was. People are saying it's the best World Series Game 7 ever. Doug's upset about that. He says Bill Mazeroski. Yeah.
How about a walk-off home run to beat the Yankees in 1960 at home by the Pirates?
60. There's kind of those prisoner of the
moment. Oh, what about Joe Carter's?
Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah.
All right, because if you're Canadian.
Hey, Canada.
That's still was a moment. It just wasn't a game seven. What is considered, like, I'm curious about this, because in baseball, people can immediately go to them. In the NFL, they cite certain Super Bowls. The Rams, two Super Bowls are mentioned, both from a good side here when you were a St. Louis Rams fan and not. What is considered, like, the greatest hockey game or the greatest Stanley Cup final game seven? Is that something that, like, instantly comes to mind for those of you who played?
Brett Hull.
99 Sabres?
Yeah. The great thing about that is, you know, that's when they had that goofy rule about, you know, your toenail in the crease sort of thing. And they celebrate, so they don't even go back and review it, but apparently there's some tape that's quirking around of the referees, like, talking, and, well, are we going to, you know, review or whatever? But so they win the cup, right? Hully, you know, obviously, you know, if you're a fan of the Blues, you've got to be cheering for Hully a little bit and that. And so it was cool. But a couple of years ago, we have the fantasy camp, and a team from Buffalo shows up. It's the Brett Hull fantasy camp in September with our alumni. And Hully is there. This team from Buffalo shows up. They have shirts made of the overhead picture of Hully scoring the goal, and their shirts say Brett Hull's a cheater. I don't think it could have got any funnier. It was awesome. And we were all over because, but I mean, what a game that was. And so any ending like that, I think Jason Arnott scored against them the following year in overtime and against the Stars. So the Stars lost the next year in overtime when Jason Arnott scored with Jersey. So there's games, anyway, overtime game, you know, overtime wins in the playoffs for the Stanley Cup. Those are memorable, certainly.
I mean,
Bobby Nystrom, Bobby Orr, any of those, you know, great.
Yeah. Blues history, 86, Monday Night Miracle's always there. That game this year, game seven, Blues and Blackhawks and Brower in game seven.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an instant classic.
Yeah.
Sometimes game sevens don't deliver. I mean, it was great to see the Blues beat the Stars, but hell, I think there were, like, you know, 50% of the crowd was left by the time that thing ended. But Blues and Blackhawks this year.
Dallas squeezed their sticks too tight that game, Tim.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I could tell just watching.
What do you think of that analysis, Chase?
Yeah, good work.
You just tell, you know.
Interns in there.
I played a long, long time in the league under a different name, of course. So,
right.
Mario Lemieux was the name that I used. I wore a wig, so you probably didn't recognize me out there. But I can tell when people are squeezing their stink.
Helmet Balderas.
Oh, you son of a so and so.
Kelly Chase with us, brought to you by Petromart. Thanks for the time, Chaser.
Over and out.
Peace.
Nice. See
you. Brought to you by Petromart.
That was your Blues Report with Kelly Chase, fueled by Petromart. Stop by your locally owned and operated Petromart location to register for your chance to win a limited edition Blues 50th anniversary Grizzly Cooler, courtesy of Petromart and Pepsi. Start all your pregame festivities at Petromart, a proud sponsor of your St. Louis Blues and a proud supplier of Phillips 66 gasoline. Petromart, clean, fast, and friendly.
There it is, Blues and Stars this evening. And Kelly Chase with us every week here, presented by Petromart. Already joined by Charlie Marlowe from Cleveland following Game 7 of the World Series. Kelly Chase, and coming up at 9:15, John Daly will be with us. Doug, PGA Pro golfer, Cardinal fan, and 30 for 30 subject, John Daly with us at 9:15. Looking forward to
Jefferson City native. Does he consider himself from Jeff City?
I think Dardanelle, Arkansas. But yes, he does have ties to Jeff City.
Cup of coffee there.
Yeah. I believe you're correct, sir.
Boy, he's lived the life, that guy.
Watch this. I live the life of a hustler high till I die.
Yeah, that was good. But this John Daly has lived a life.
Boy, he really has seen the world. Yeah. Boy, he hit that at a time. Maybe he still does hit the ball farther than any other person on earth, I think.
Who do you think hits the ball furthest right now?
Bubba Watson,
Bubba
maybe?
Watson, Dustin Johnson?
Iggy?
There's probably some guys.
Ian Woosie?
No, not Little Woosie. But there are guys in these long drive competitions that hit the ball farther.
Maybe Iggy has a name.
You got a name, Iggy?
Timmy just named both of them, Bubba Watson and Dustin Johnson.
Nice. Well, you had another name.
Bubba Watson, too. I didn't get credit, but you're a third.
Oh, well, Doug and Tim just named two of them.
But Timmy did it first and did it better.
Even guys that are in the middle of the pack are hitting the ball 300. So
it is insane. I mean,
some of it's the equipment.
Well, it's all the equipment.
Yeah, the guys aren't any bigger than they've ever been.
And they've
really
regulated the ball. But I was asking my guy. You know who my guy is?
Ed Schwent, yeah.
And
Old Hickory.
That's where I go for my lessons. I said, what can you do? He goes, you can work out and maybe add a few yards here and there, but it's just kind of like, why can a guy throw a ball 100 miles an hour? It's just, you know, most of these guys have been playing since, you know, I mean, what,
4 years old? Knee-high to a grasshopper, Tim.
Nice. See, I said 4 years old, and it just wasn't any good. You say knee-high to a grasshopper, and all of a sudden people are seeing.
Right, you can understand it a little bit more.
But there are things Doug can help with, you know, to add length, like hitting through the ball.
Right.
What else can you do?
Open up your hips a little bit.
Open up your hips
a little bit before the downswing. Yeah, that's been my record.
And got out for a quick nine holes yesterday with my dad. We had to talk about other acquisitions that we're looking at, you know, as we just continue to accumulate assets. You know, once you live on Tam Avenue, you just kind of have that.
I would think.
You have quite a portfolio.
Thank you. It's strong.
Mergers and acquisitions. That's, those are your two big worries.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And that's why we were lucky enough to play on the Redbud course at Forest Park yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like to brag. But there's so many damn leaves all over the place. Even if you hit the ball in the fairway, you can't find the damn thing. Is that just the way it is? Just all over the place?
This time of the year.
I just wanted to get out and play with it. I mean, playing Monday in Las Vegas, it was just like perfection. And I was like, oh, it's a beautiful day. Done with everything around 3:30. I'll meet my father. We'll have a nice quick nine holes. Talk it over. Play golf. And, you know, you hit a ball and it's under a leaf and you can't find it. Or worse yet, a shrub.
Yeah. Have they ever figured a way that they could put a little chip on the ball with it not being destroyed when you hit the ball? To where you can locate, or you can locate your ball wherever it is. I guess that's the big thing is they can't, you know, the ball gets crushed so much when you take a full swing at it that they can't keep the chip on there without it being broken.
Well, somebody asked me, we were playing golf. I think it was out at the at Normandy, and somebody said, "God, how come pros never lose balls?" I said, well, it's because the fans are right there and they keep it from going in the woods, and they know where it goes. You don't have anybody out there seeing it.
They hit it straight. In all fairness. When Tim plays, they're fans.
There's a small gallery yesterday, a small gallery.
So I put that on Tim's lemmings for not locating any ball that might have been lost.
Tim's Army, I believe, is what they call it.
That's what they call it.
Yeah. But this time of year, courses just don't have the money to pay somebody to go out and blow leaves every hour.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just hanging out with my dad. You know, and it was a nice, I mean, hell, 80 degrees in November? Forget about it. So it wasn't necessarily about shaving strokes off my game, although I did wear pants, which, of course, shave 4 strokes off your round.
And if I may, you guys decided to acquire a new property. You guys have bought Crestwood Mall, which will be the new home in the future of the Tim McKernan Museum.
Yep.
It's being torn down right now as we speak.
But they're going to build it back up.
That's what that's all about.
And it'll be just like a wiffle ball field and a White Castle.
Room for a puppet amphitheater in there anywhere?
Tim? And maybe a script clip. I'm sure that will get approved by planning and zoning.
No, it won't. No, sir, it won't.
Forest Park has gotten better, though. It used to be.
It really has. I enjoyed playing there.
Yeah, you talk about losing balls, but back in the day, you could lose golf clubs. I mean, you go up to the green, you come back, and somebody's riding away in your cart with golf clubs in there.
I lost all my hubcaps there once. All 4 hubcaps.
While you were golfing,
stole all the hubcaps. They sure did. And they were good ones, too. They were wire rim. They're like $100 a piece.
Oh, you got nice rims, huh?
Well, that's not great for
22. Were they spinning?
I'm going back 30 years. It was a Mercury Cougar that had really nice hubcaps on. They wiped me out.
Tim, I'll be your ball finder whenever you play golf and make sure your ball is in the middle of the fairway. That's from Kai Avorsky.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. If you ever get a chance to play a course that has 4 caddies available, get one.
Where was I going to play in Vegas this week? Everybody kept telling me to play Shadow Creek. Have you heard about this?
Mm-mm.
But then Ed told me about Cascada. And I got the pricing on it, and then it was, I think, $500 plus a caddy.
Sure.
And I'm like, I don't think so.
I used to play Forest Park for $8, 18 holes.
Well, yeah, but of course you'd have to buy new rims.
Yeah, yeah, but it's still cheaper than paying the $500.
Well, if you're a caddy at a good country club, you make a great living.
I caddied Old Horse in 98.
How much you make? Like, probably you probably made like $12 a loop.
Well, I left.
Don't say loop.
I left Joe Buck 7 iron on the 16th, I think. Still talk about that. Yeah.
I caddied at Westwood as a kid, and it was late in the afternoon, and I hadn't gotten out because I was always the last one to get out. And
what does that mean? Why?
Because I was small and
no one picked you to caddy.
Yeah, I was like the last kid picked. Right. In sports, I was the first kid picked, but in caddying, I was the last. Text in.
I'm glad you clarified the record first when it came to real competition.
John Daly with us at 9:15. Yes, the John Daly at 9:15 with us on the Appliances Counter phone lines. This is the Ryan Kelly Morning Game.